This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, welcome everyone. I was thinking about today how it's quite auspicious day today, because there's many of you that this is your first time taking up a formal meditation practice, or today was the day you committed yourself to trying this, or you finally got up the nerve to drive up the mountain and figure out where the heck is this place? Where is Jikoji? And stuck in a little valley on the side of the mountain, hidden among the trees. This little jewel we have here. We have this little treasure, this dusty treasure waiting here for us to uncover. Well, my name is Oshin. I'm one of the guiding teachers here at Jikoji. I'm also deaf. I can't hear. I lost my hearing when I was young. So I can read lips and I can talk, but I can't hear anything. So you see some words on the screen. That's part of the captions, part of the tech that's helping me. And we may have sign language. My sign language interpreter may join us. He's making his way up the dusty mountain too. So he may join us in this seat soon. But so today I wanted to talk a little bit about emptiness. You know? Do you know what emptiness is? Do you really know what emptiness is? We talk a lot about emptiness in our tradition. And we were just talking at the breakfast table. A lot of what happens at the breakfast table gets put into my Dharma talks, so be careful. Be careful what you say while you're having toast and eggs. But we were saying, what is emptiness? What do we mean by that? We need a better word for it. Maybe unboundedness is a nice feeling. So questions come up a lot around this very hard to define term. So I thought, let's play with emptiness a little bit more. And so come play with me in emptiness, okay? So today we chanted part of the Heart Sutra.
On page 5, if you'd like to take a look at it.
Yeah, so we left our chant books on our seats, so some of you might be interested. This is a famous text that's chanted throughout the Mahayana Buddhist world. It's being chanted now at hundreds, maybe thousands of temples as we speak. You know, this is a core text that's present in most temples. And as we chanted this, it kind of takes us through what emptiness is, the different kinds of emptiness almost, and it invites us a little deeper and deeper each time. So about the time I started practicing Zen was actually when I was a teenager, and it was around the time I was actually really pushing myself in sports and in other endeavors in my life. I think a lot of teenage boys, we need to do that. You know, push. So I was camping and trekking and hiking a lot, and I found it really challenging, really inspiring, and a lot of fun. And one time when I was a teen, I was camping in the woods. Alone. And I like to do that sometimes. And some people hear that and say, oh no, that sounds awful. But I like to do that. I like to go out in the woods and be alone sometimes. But this time, on this particular trip, I was not having a good time. I remember having a very strong feeling about what my experience should be. What I had hoped for in my time in the woods. What I wanted my experience to be like. And of course, we can all relate to that. Even if we don't have a deep philosophical understanding of emptiness, we all have some lived experience of emptiness. So I want to talk about that. So when I was out stuck in the middle of the woods, I had already been a student of Buddhism for a little bit, and I had the words of the Heart Sutra in my head. Form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. That which is form is emptiness. That which is emptiness, form. The same is true for feelings, perceptions, impulses, consciousness. O Shariputra, all dharmas are marked with emptiness. They do not appear nor disappear, are not tainted nor pure, do not increase nor decrease. Therefore, in emptiness, no form, no feelings, no perceptions, no impulses, no consciousness, no eye, no ears. No. So this is what's in my head and in my heart as I'm hiking. And I knew the words, and I was trying very hard to understand their meaning. I still am. I still am trying. And sometimes we need a deeper understanding. Sometimes we need to really know it in our bones. So there I was camping, and I had this small spiritual experience being completely free. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this. I was carrying everything on my back that I needed, a little bit of food, water, my tent, so my shelter. And I had it. I had what I needed. I'm not sure what exactly sparked the experience, but, or if I'm even remembering this correctly, 25, 30 years later. But there's something really interesting about having everything you need with you, like that. And I was thinking about that recently, think about these monks of old. They used to write these things like, you know, I'm like a snail. You know, I go everywhere with my home. It's my home, my shell. It's my orchestra. You know, I'm always home everywhere I go with my little robe, my little ball. And I was thinking about that recently while I was ordering a coffee at the airport with my carry-on, my rollerboard, my little backpack. And I was thinking, I'm like a little snail, just going to Jokoji for a while. And then I'll go back home, I'll go back east for a while. Just like, after you. I'm just like, okay, this is okay. Anyway, so there I was camping, and it started to rain. And I mean really, really rain. And in me was a deep feeling that I needed something very different than what was happening. I was in a lot of discomfort. And I could feel myself pushing and pulling at myself and the experience, pushing at my thoughts, trying to make them different, trying to make the situation different, trying to make it something different than it was. Do you know that feeling? No. And my trail, as I was hiking, it brought me alongside a lake. And next to the water there, due to the rains that we were experiencing over these couple of days, the lake had grown. And it had grown to the point that it actually swallowed up the trail. I couldn't see even where the trail was, just water everywhere. And I found myself in this field of water beside the water with all of these trees. And it's raining so hard on top of me at the same time. And all of my things, my whole life, you know? And I'm standing deep in this water, you know, that's starting now to go over the tops of my boots. And I don't know where to go. And I thought to myself, what happened to that feeling of, I have everything I need right here? What happened to that feeling? Isn't everything I need still right here? With me, in my backpack? Right here, in my heart? In this field of water? I'm also completely soaked, right? It's both. So I stood there in my puddle, as a puddle, being a puddle, right? Walking in this great big puddle experience. And I just thought, I just have to accept all of this rain. I just have to accept it. And I stood there for a moment, instead of thinking, where's the trail? Where's the trail? I'm lost. I'm so lost. I don't know what to do now. This isn't in the guidebook. Instead, I just took a moment and I just put my face to the sky. And I just thought, it's rain. It's rain. So what shifted? That shifted for teenage little Oshin. Well, I was never little. Water met water. There was an understanding of water. Like, I had an acceptance of rain all the way. Right? This, we've all had a moment like this, right? That is, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. That which is form, it's emptiness. Slosh, slosh, slosh. Drip, drip, drip. That which is emptiness is form. Water on top of water, water through water, water of water, through and through, through everything. I understand now. Thank you. I'm still soaking wet. I still have to hike on. So what the sutra is teaching us is that we're always part of this great big flowing, this great big reality. And that we're never separate from this great big reality, this great big flowing, this great big way. It's saying we are water standing in water, also watching water while we receive the water. But we're also somehow reaching for water. Through each moment, through each of our connections, and through each of our actions, throughout all of time, we're not separate. That's what the sutra says. And each moment we're connected to every other moment throughout our lives, throughout our cultures, throughout our different various languages too. Throughout all of our history, through our ancestors, It's a flowing that goes out in all directions. And it has to include my discomfort and my wishes and my hopes and my aches and my sorrows and my joys. And it's all there, reflected back at you in that water. Sometimes we're lucky and we get hit over the head like that. But often a lot of these spiritual lessons are really subtle. And you don't need to do heroic things like go stand in a puddle. Spell while you're washing the dishes. Water awakens to the basis of water. But how often in our lives do we feel like we don't have it? We can't find that. Suzuki Roshi has a famous little quote where he talks about it's like wandering in a mist. And we've all used that quote so many times that we're all not just quoting each other, misquoting it. I don't even remember exactly how it goes, but the idea is this, it's like a mist. And I can feel myself like walking through this, especially when I fly into the Bay Area. Welcome to the mist. So you can feel yourself kind of walking through it. And if you do that long enough, you would be damp, right? That's how it is, he says. That's how it is. And that's how it is to study Buddhism, to study Zen. And I just feel like we're winding around in the mist sometimes, in this mist. But it's okay. Each thing in the world, each moment, connected to each other. And if they're so connected to each other, they're always interacting and influencing each other. But do they have their own substance? Do things have their own substance? So the Heart Sutra is trying to explain this and trying to take this apart for us. And we think, hey, they must. Things must have their own independent, I'm ocean. I've got my needs and my wants, and I've got my little car and my card to get on the BART, and you've got yours, right? It's separate. But we have to acknowledge that it's still something going on where everything feels connected and related and influencing each other, at least subtly, all the time. It's as if we're walking in a mist, and all this mist is connected to all this other mist. Right? And we're also a little bit, maybe a little misty ourselves, too. So that's what the Heart Sutra is saying. More or less. But if we stop to examine anything and we go a little deeper, and we can pick up anything, and we could examine it really closely, and we could take it completely apart into all its little pieces, right? Down to its particles, down to its atoms, right? And down at the atomic level, we would just find this like atomic mist. Or if any of you are into physics, like a quantum foam, you know, it's all just mist on top of mist. It's all just space. But it's still, I don't know, it's got form. It's a little firm. It's hard. I still have to pay rent on the first. You're not going to do that for me, right? It's still up to me. So that's what the Heart Sutra is saying. It has these qualities of this mist-like, all the way down to the atomic level, all the way down to the subatomic level. Mist interacting with mist. And then the Heart Sutra goes on and on and on. It's actually what we chant is a small part of the section of a much longer, larger text. And it goes on, and it says, with correct understanding and correct study, you could actually liberate yourself by working with this concept, by really bringing it in until it's not a concept anymore. And so you can be like Little Ocean, out in the forest, feeling pretty stuck, feeling alone, feeling lost. And you have the Prajnaparamita in your head. When life becomes a little intense for you, you can fall back on this teaching. It can be a little bit comforting even. Well, that's not the point. It's nice to have that comfort. Knowing that what arises in our life is just that. It's just what is arising in our life. And I understand that all those aches and desires and what I wanted to get out of that camping trip, what I thought my experience should be, and my reaction to what the experience actually was, we know, hey, that's just what happens. That's just what's arising. We can feel how it's like a mist, and I was like a cloud watching that mist arise and dissipate, take on different forms, different shapes. Some of them new, some of them maybe really familiar to us. And while I was writing this, I thought, wow, that sounds marvelously disconnected. And I'm just like floating around in the forest. Well, anybody who knows me says, that's probably what he's doing right now. But truly, it's actually, when you can operate from a place like this, it's actually a place of real deep connection. There's no experience, there's no ache, there's no lake, no water, no raindrop. That's even beyond me. That's beyond my sphere of practice, beyond what I'm doing with my life. It's all me extending out in front of me. And when I take a breath in, I'm breathing in. I'm breathing in that lake. I'm breathing in lake air. And it becomes me. And there's a certain point where there's air in me and lake inside me, and I'm giving back to the lake, leaning on a tree, and we're all in this deep connected place. Beyond what I can see, even. So we understand that emptiness doesn't mean there's nothing, or that things have all their own separate existence or something like that. We tend to think of it as things are really solid and discrete. And we start to realize, oh, hey, nothing is as solid and discrete as we think it is. So when we take on practices like Zazen, like we've been practicing together this morning, we're actually really radically coming home to ourselves. We are in the middle of our lives, in the middle of our misty, hazy lives, and we're stopping and we're trying to really pay attention. And we're trying to really taste that emptiness. We're trying to really rest in it and experience what's really here. And when we do this practice, the more we do it, we start to see things a little more clearly. Even if it's misty or hazy, we can just trust or feel it in our bones a little more. Feel it in a really deep way. So when we're talking about wisdom and Zen practice, we often talk about this word prajna. And prajna is this kind of special kind of wisdom we talk about. It's the understanding of emptiness that we're talking about. And we often think about it as prajna, like wisdom, and compassion as being like the two wings of a bird. Like those are two things that can really move us in our practice, like wisdom and compassion. And we need both to kind of balance our lives and balance us in the winds that blow. But in actuality, there's not two wings. It's just like one wing. It's one giant bird expressing wind nature, is what we're trying to say. So if you keep reading this sutra, it goes on and on. And it's saying, it's expressing this nature. Because in deeply realizing emptiness, in coursing in emptiness, what do we see? That everything's connected. And naturally, compassion must arise. So, I know that a lot of you are probably like me, that you came to this practice because we had some feeling of dissatisfaction in our lives. We had some kind of suffering in our lives, or we wanted to do something about it. It's like we all came to this practice with, oh, here's my interpreter. Welcome, we saved you a seat. Take your time, sit down. So that's what the what drove us a lot to come to practice here is we all had our own motivations, but usually they were kind of almost selfish. I want to fix me. I want to feel better about this. I don't like how things are going at work. I'm not feeling good about this. Yeah. So we really kind of focused on this one. And so that's what the Buddhas and the ancestors and what the Heart Sutra is teaching us, is to look at our misunderstandings and to look at the root cause of this suffering. Because when we're talking about the suffering, we're talking about the suffering of our hearts. And that it can be reduced, but it can never be avoided, because pain is inevitable. It's part of being human. And it's the suffering part that's worth talking about. And we can shift that. In fact, when we're talking about pain, we're often talking about the mental anguish that goes along with things, emotional pain, or the emotional pain that goes along with the physical pain. And there's this whole fascinating field of study of health and where pain and Buddhism and meditation meet. And I wanted to just kind of wrap up with talking about that. A Buddhist teacher once explained to me that things are empty, but we really tend to get attached to the wrong parts of things. I said, okay. He said, it's like when we go to the movies. It's okay to sit there and watch a movie and to be moved by it and to even enjoy it. There's a marvelous story being played out on a screen in front of us. And in some ways, it's very real. It feels very real. And emptiness is saying that it's not like these things don't exist. It's not like they're not real. It's just a different way of experiencing. So one of the ways we talk about that is this don't know mind, or this beginner's mind. That's our Zen kind of reaction to it. We just held everything in a really open, loose way, and not held on to it so tightly, maybe. So in our tradition, we say beginner's mind. You know, this is kind of a nice way to say it. I had a friend who studies in the Korean tradition. He's a Korean monk. And his master says, don't know. He says all the time, don't know. Only don't know. And he shouts it all the time at him. And he said one time my friend was sitting in front of him and they were having a question and answer session. And my friend was sitting in front of him and he was asking him this question. And the teacher took a stick and just hit him in the gut and said, don't know, only don't know. I said, whoa. Because he really felt it. Luckily, nobody will hit you here. Nobody will ever poke you with a stick. So my friend then said, you know, he will feel himself sometimes getting caught up in his head into certain kinds of thinking. And he can feel his teacher's stick in his stomach. Boom. Oh. He just don't know. Just release it. Just let it go. Try and meet it more directly. And in having this kind of experience and seeing things more clearly, it's like walking out of that movie theater and walking into the sunlight of the day. And sometimes it's like, oh, that movie, it still had an impact on me. I can still feel that. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I laughed. I cried. 5 stars. But I know it was a movie, right? I know it was like a dream. And as solid as it felt, and as much as it moved me, I still walk out of the theater into the daylight. And then I understand what reality is. Okay, one last story before I wrap up. There's this really great old Chinese Zen story where there's a young monk who was playing with a spider. And the teacher was admonishing him. And he said, you know, you have to really push yourself in your practice. You have to stop goofing off and all this stuff. So, okay. So he sat down and he said, I'm going to sit down until I awaken. I'm going to sit here until I become fully enlightened, and a fully enlightened being. That's what I'm going to do. And he really pushed himself. And he pushed himself and pushed himself. And his teacher was like, uh-oh, this isn't right. This isn't good either. And so push himself and push himself. And then one day he said, I'm completely committed. And if I don't wake up today, I'm going to use this knife. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to do it today. And the teacher said, you know, what's with all this energy? He said, well, when I sit, all these feelings and these emotions and all of these things come at me. And he said, while I've been sitting, I've had that spider that I was tormenting when I was a younger monk. It comes down, you know, and it torments me. So I'm either going to kill the spider or I'm going to kill me. That's it. I'm done. Well, I think we've all been there, you know. Maybe we were not, you know, with a knife or something, but we've all had that feeling of, I've had it up to here. Or I need to change something, or I'm really going to fix this, or something. So this monk is like, my problems, all these things that follow me into zazen and follow me into meditation and plague me. It's a big spider.
So he says, that's it. I'm going to use my knife and I'm going to kill this spider in my zazen. And the teacher said, seeing all this tension, he said, how about instead I give you a paintbrush? And when you encounter the spider in your zazen, I want you to paint an enso. I want you to paint a circle on his belly. And the monk is like, okay. So he's got his paintbrush and he's trying and he's sitting. And here comes all his problems, his whole life, all of this stuff weighing down on him in zazen. And he thinks, here comes the spider. Oh, if I had that knife, I could finally kill it. I could finally do away with the spider. That's plaguing me. So he trusts the teacher and he reaches out and he goes, okay, and he draws an enso with ink, the sumi ink, on the belly of the spider. There, it's done. Uh-huh. And he's sweating and he's done and he's tired. And after he's done, he goes and he sees the teacher. And the teacher sees that the student has had some kind of breakthrough. He's sweating. I did it. I caught the spider. Teacher says, you caught the spider. He said, yeah, I put a big enso right on the spider during zazen. He said, oh. He said, lift your robe. And the monk said, what? He said, yes, lift your robe. I said, okay. And he lifts his robe and he has a big enso on his own belly. Oh. I think it's a nice place to pause, a nice place to stop. We thought we have a little time for questions and answers. So if you have any questions, you can raise your hand and we'll call on you and go from there. So any questions or comments? Again, don't worry, I won't poke any of you. Yes, sure, Horace.
Tell us about the end of your camping trip when you came home.
I got asked, tell us about the end of your camping trip. Tell us how you got home. So this was really in the early days, kind of before handheld GPS. But I knew that the kind of trail ran parallel to a road. So I got so rained out at one point that I was just completely flooded out. I went and camped. One more night that night, in a latrine. It was just so rainy, and it was like biblical rains. It was just raining and raining and raining. And in the pine barrens, this area where I was camping, had these little latrines that had these extended roofs that went over a little wash basin sink. And so I was kind of under this roof, under a sink, but still kind of exposed. But it was the best I could do, and it just rained and rained and rained. And I finally got some sleep after like 2 days. And I woke up that morning. I woke up, and, I didn't get to sleep until like 3 or 4, by the time I found the place. It just soaked. And you wake up and it's like 9, 10 a.m. Like I've overslept. Usually when I'm camping, I get up at 5, So now it's like 10 a.m. It's blaring sunlight and I get up
And I'm in this latrine on this concrete pad that is completely surrounded by pristine water. I'm just this little shit house in this lake of the jewel-like diamond serpent, unperturbed, mirror-like, you know, and there I am with this little boat, you know, just in the middle of nowhere, you know, it's like, how do I get out of here? So then I had to hike over to this this county road and then hike out and just abandon the trip. And it's just like, a certain point, I'm hiking up this county road with my boots, you know, you tie the laces together and they're over my neck. I'm hiking barefoot, and it's my boots weigh like 30 pounds each, just soaking it, and it's like, this is what it is. But, you know, at a certain point, if I was going, oh, I am supposed to be out here for two or three more days, I failed, I was supposed to reach the other trailhead on the other side of the park, it was supposed to be like this. If I was a real strong camper, I would have put everything on my head and waded through the water. You know, I just said, oh, the trip is over. I'm not going to wade through the water. I'm just going to try and hike out and go get a cup of coffee somewhere. Warm up. You know. Thank you again, by the way, for the cup of coffee. That's a nice soft question to get us started, but you know, that's our life. Oh, you have a question here? Did you have a?
Yes, I do. So the Enzo is basically recognizing you're the problem. So after that, what's next?
That's a great question. So we've drawn the Enzo. And we've gone, oh, it's me. You know, I'm the guy that went out the door and it said rain forecast. And I went, I'm going to go anyway. Right? And it would be really easy to stand there and say, hey, this is all going terribly. You know, but that's just nature being nature. You know, I'm not. So we draw the Enzo and we say, hey, it's me too. I'm a part of all of this, you know. I'm a part of all of this. It's a great natural thing that happens to a lot of people when they practice Zazen. They naturally, you know, we have people that come here and they'll come and they'll sit for a while and they develop a sort of practice and they kind of figure out a little bit what's going on. And then they want to start volunteering. It's like what happens is naturally compassion arises. It's like naturally what happens next is, oh, I can do something about this. Because we're not in this anxious place where we're in the middle of this misty thing just kind of grasping around. Instead, we're standing next to our latrine of clarity going, I see it all so clear in front of me. Yeah? We can respond appropriately, you know? We can respond much more appropriately. Yeah, so one question here, and then we'll go. Yeah, did you have a question?
Randy has a question on.
Randy, and then, did you have a question?
Yes.
How about we, you, and then we'll go to Randy. Okay. So please.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing about your big moment in life. I do have a question about the concept of emptiness you mentioned. So how do you think about having goals in life? Because I've been used to living a very goal-oriented life. But I feel like I also came through a lot of problems in life. So I've let go a lot of things. But if I still have a calling or have a goal in life, do you think I'm not empty enough?
Yeah, the Buddha talked about this. He said, you know, in the story he said, I think, who was he talking to? Maybe Ananda. And he said, when we want to, you and I, we want to walk to the park together.
What happens to our desire to walk to the park when we get to the park? So that's what one of the things he said. He said, like, oh, let's look at that. So I think there's a really beautiful thing to say, I'm hungry. I have this desire. I can look at it. I can feed it. And I can say, what happened to that? You know, it feels less firm, right? It feels less strong when we're looking at it with clarity and compassion. It dominates us less, you know? But there's no problem with having goals. It just, when we achieve those goals or when we arrive, have we let go, you know? So I always think of it as being much more, it's like kind of like walking with an open hand all the time, you know? If you constantly have something in your hand and you're gripping onto it, you can't receive anything. But if your hand is open, you can receive, right? So it's the same way with our goals. It's like, okay, like that, you know? we're not gripping it like this. It's okay to hold something and hold it very lightly, right? Maybe. Right? I got engaged last week. Oh, thank you. It was very easy. I don't know why I got a round of applause for that, but love is great, isn't it?
Yes.
But anyway, I got engaged just last week. And it's like, how do I look at my partner? How do I look at this relationship? I mean, we have work, family, society, our voting district. We have all of these things to think about. But like, even just like our partner, you know, how do I want to grow old with this person. I want to honor them. I want to support them. I don't want to support me. How do I do both, you know? And the energy is very much like this, you know? It's like, I can hold them, but loosely, you know, very, very loosely. So that they feel free and they feel supported, and I feel free and I feel supported, you know. Maybe it's something like that. So with me, with my goals, it's kind of like that. So I found myself saying, well, I can't continue hiking. I can't go on. It's getting deeper. I didn't bring my fins, my goggles, you know. So it's like, this is not what is actually happening here, what is actually arising. Yeah. Okay, we had Randy online. Yes, Randy. Hi.
I just want to thank you for your talk, because I could feel myself giving myself permission to move back and forth between my clarity and confusion, and feeling the impermanence of each, and that sometimes I'm not too comfortable doing that, especially when I go into confusion or not, that things don't feel right or where am I. So it's just part of that ongoing process. It just, and it's probably never going to end. You know, I think I'm going to get to this point where I'll never have confusion, or I never feel kind of like, what, you know. But listening to you, I could feel in myself this, it's okay. It's okay. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. Giving myself permission to move between clarity and confusion. Ah, thank you for that. That's such a good gift. As we close here, I'll read one quote that you're reminding me of. I have a student who's reading a book about work life, and it's called 4,000 Weeks. I've never read it. I don't know anything about it. It's not a Buddhism book, but I just wanted to tell you where the quote is coming from. Now, the book, the concept of 4,000 weeks is, that's about how long our average life is. That's about how long our life is. It's about 4,000 weeks on average. When I heard that, 4,000 weeks, I thought, oh, that must be how long our work life is, from 18 years old to 50 when I'm going to retire. But no, it's like, that's about the average. So, it's about, what are we going to do with our life? The book. And the quote goes, "It's alarming to face the prospect that you might never truly feel as though you know what you're doing. In work, in marriage, in parenting, and anything else. But it's liberating too, because it removes the central reason for feeling self-conscious or inhibited about your performance in those domains in the present moment. If the feeling of total authority is never going to arrive, you might as well not wait any longer to give such activities your all. To put bold plans into practice, to stop erring on the side of caution. It's even more liberating to reflect on that everyone else is also in the same boat, whether they're aware of it or not." It's not a Buddhist book. But yet, they've, through examining their life, this author has gone, this is what I see. And somehow, what they see aligns with what we call the Bodhisattva ideal. Yeah. You don't have to know what you're doing. None of us do. Give yourself permission to move between clarity and confusion. I think we'll end it there. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.